on the same page. So welcome everybody. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Dr. Brian Walsh. I'm a chiropractor, kind of a wellness chiropractor, I would consider myself, because we do more than just chiropractic. We treat the whole person. Nutritionally, it's kind of, you know, body, mind, spirit, I believe that, because it's one big picture, right? It's not just one thing that causes ill health. There's many things that cause ill health. Tonight, we're specifically going to talk about inflammation. The name of the talk was the anti-inflammatory diet, and that's going to be from the dietary standpoint how you handle it. But I'm going to talk about the overall process of inflammation, because in order to have an anti-inflammatory diet, it's like, well, what is inflammation, right? Because we hear that term, but it's good to understand what it is and is it good or bad, right? Because a lot of times we just get this bad connotation about it, but there's actually a reason why it's there in the first place. A little bit about myself. I was an engineer for 10 years before I did this, and it was a chiropractor that kept me from surgery, and I got pretty excited about it and jumped ship and went back to school. And this is my 21st year actually in practice. And so I'm now, instead of an electrical engineer, I'm a bioengineer, because I get to help people, which is a lot funner, actually. More challenging, actually, than working on circuits. So when you think of inflammation, is that a bad thing or a good thing? In general, yeah. And most people say it's a bad thing. But without inflammation, your body couldn't function properly, actually. So there's actually, when you look at inflammation, there's really two ways you can look at it. The acute form of inflammation, which is pretty much how our body was designed to handle things like infection. If you get infected by a virus or something, your white blood cells, and as part of trying to control that inflammation, with that bug or virus, it actually creates an inflammatory response to destroy that virus. Without inflammation, your cuts wouldn't heal, right? Because you get that cut, it kind of gets inflamed, which is the inflammation process. But in the process, you know, the white blood cells, they come in there, they do their job, they clean stuff up, they keep the bacteria from getting out of control. And then ideally that just calms down and it heals, you know, in a number of weeks. So you could break it down to acute inflammation, which is very necessary for you to survive, versus chronic inflammation, which is like really the big problem in America in terms of health. Because what they're finding, regardless of the disease, the root is always a chronic inflammatory condition that's usually been there for a long time, that is out of control. It's not being handled properly. And when it's chronic like that for a long time, then you start having lots of problems. Because it just creates this, like, this soup of problems that cause your arteries to have problems, your brain, all kinds of things can go after that. There's different ways to look at this in the blood to measure this. There's something you can get called the blood spot test, where it's actually just you prick your finger and you put it on this thing and you send it in. And that is a way, what they do is they measure the good and bad omegas in your body and the oils that make up your cells. And based on that, you can get a good idea of how inflamed or normal inflammation levels are in your body, because there's markers for that, and it's a very simple way. I hope to incorporate that before the end of the year, because it's a very simple way to do things. There's some blood tests called C-reactive protein, which is a non-specific marker for inflammation. Erythrocyte sedimentation rate, ESR, these are general, but if they're high, there's something going on, right, in your body. On the blood sugar side, your hemoglobin A1C, as that goes up, your inflammation goes up, right? So that's more towards the blood sugar, but we know as your blood sugar goes high, so does your inflammation. So, and that's one of the reasons why diabetes is so bad, because it sets up an inflammatory process in your body that really starts destroying like almost everything when it comes long term. And then there's another one, homocysteine, and that one's more specific for your artery system, really, arteries and blood vessels. But in general, when it's high, it's not good. You have a higher risk of heart disease if that's a high number. That being high is worse than cholesterol being high. And they should test this, you know, at least yearly when you get blood tests in addition to the cholesterol, because it's actually much more valuable than the cholesterol number is, believe it or not. So different ways, you know, when you think of inflammation, some people, like, they think of pain, right? That's like the obvious form, joint pain, muscle pain. That's just a sign that something is out of balance, more than it should be. But other things are signs of inflammation that people just write off, right? Things like memory problems and concentration problems, right? That can just be another marker, and it's just showing up in your brain that you've got some kind of inflammatory process going on. Hormone imbalances, right, whether it's male or female, is another sign that something is out of balance. This is something people don't think about much, but mood issues and behavioral issues, again, can be an underlying condition if there's an inflammatory process in the body. When that's present, you also have an increased risk of stroke, right, and heart disease. So that's another good reason right away to keep those numbers at normal levels. And then you're also at higher risk for autoimmune disorders. So that's why when they've looked at in the past 5 to 10 years, they've been really looking at the whole inflammatory thing. And all these different diseases that they put labels on, it all starts with inflammation getting out of control at some point in the body, and then it just stays there. And your body's not meant to stay in that state. It's meant to be there for a certain amount of time, clean up the mess, and be gone, right? That's ideally how inflammation works. And the other thing that they found is that when people have these conditions for long periods of time, then you have a higher risk of dementia, right? And no one wants that. It's one of the worst things in the world, you know, Alzheimer's and all these things. And so that's also the root of a lot of the dementia and brain disorders or an inflammatory process in the body. So different things can trigger these. The obvious one on the physical standpoint is like trauma of some form. And that does happen, right? We get in car accidents and these different things. And sometimes we recover from those. Sometimes they create a chronic inflammation state, especially when you get a really bad trauma. That damage the joints pretty severely. And so some people have permanent issues after that, you know, because it's you can only damage the tissue so much and it won't recover. So that's one of the reasons. Infections in the body. I mentioned that you get an infection, your body's supposed to create inflammation and knock it out. Well, some people can have these chronic inflammations like candida infection or some low-grade virus in the body, and those create like low-grade inflammation that just stays there and stays there, right? And people don't think about those kind of things causing inflammation. On the nutritional standpoint, you can have, if you're missing certain B vitamins and minerals, that's where I mentioned that homocysteine number. If you're not either getting enough of certain B vitamins or you don't absorb them well, that homocysteine number goes up. So that's kind of like a marker. When that number is high, it usually means that you're not absorbing B vitamins properly, or you're not getting enough, one or the other. Actually, that I forgot, the C-reactive protein, the other reason that goes up, like it can go up pretty sharp sometimes, is an infection. So say you go to the doctor and they do that test, and it's like higher than normal, like pretty high. The number goes from like zero to pretty high. But usually numbers over 15 or 20, most likely someone either just had an infection or they're getting ready to have an infection of some kind. So in those cases, you want to retest, you know, in a month or so to make sure that that's the reason why it was there. But sometimes if that's elevated over 10, that's another sign that they need to dig deeper. There's maybe some chronic infection in your body that they haven't found that's creating that CRP to be high. So it's like detective work. You know, we have to be our own detectives now because the medical system is overwhelmed and it's getting worse. It's just going to get worse. And these doctors do not have time to do their homework. And they don't have time to be your detective. They just have time to write the script and they're gone. That's just where we are in medicine, unfortunately. When you have toxins in your body, right? If you have mercury fillings and you've had them a long time, sometimes if you don't break that down and get rid of it, that'll create more inflammation in your body. And it especially attacks your nerves and your brain and your joints and these different things. So that's why detox programs can be very helpful for people to get them better. The obvious one that we're kind of going to hone in on the end is the diet, right? And what happened in our diet in the past 100 years it went from a whole food-based diet to a processed food diet for the most part, right? Because it was very easy, and the packaging made things last long, but it's not good nutritionally. You know, our bodies were meant to live on a certain thing, and when you change the foundation of what we need to function, the body doesn't function right. So, and that's where the inflammation goes up. And we'll talk about some specifics on that too. This is one that people don't realize how bad it's gotten recently. Chronic stress over time increases inflammation in the body. It tends to make your blood a little thicker than it should be, which is not a good thing for strokes and heart issues and for small capillaries in your hands and stuff. But it's kind of a protective mechanism, right? If you're in a fight or something and you get cut, you want your blood to be a little thicker so you don't bleed out, right? So it's actually a protective mechanism. But if you're under stress for years because of your job or family issues, then it can actually get thicker and more likely to have clotting. So another reason to get stress under control. And we have a separate seminar for that, actually. This is another thing. They're studying more and more what happens in the body at sleep, right? And the more sleep deprived you are, that also contributes to the inflammatory process, especially in the brain, because your brain uses sleep time to clean it up, to clean itself up, as does the rest of your body. But they found that people that consistently get less than 6 hours a night, they tend to have more inflammation in their body because they're not going through the normal repair process that our bodies were designed to do. And on a similar note is the sleep apnea is a similar thing because you're not oxygenating properly, you're not cleansing your body, and if that's suspected, that's a good thing to get evaluated because it can really help people heal and sleep better with those machines and the CPAP machines. So there is a time to use medication, right? If you've got a screaming infection or you were in a bad car accident and you need to get things down temporarily, there's a place for short-term use of these things, that, you know, like a steroid or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like naproxen or ibuprofen. But it's the long-term use of those that aren't good, right? We know it causes increased risk of heart disease and all other issues for the non-steroidals anyways. The steroids just, they wreck every part of your body when you stay on those for long periods of time. And unfortunately, especially in the autoimmune world, they'll use low-dose steroid therapy for years, and it just wrecks people's bodies. It's just not a good thing, you know. But that's the only way they know to control it, because it usually works most of the time. But also, it causes GI problems, and usually over time you can get used to those inflammatory drugs, you know. You build up tolerance to them, and then they don't work anymore. So it's all about getting to the cause of these different things, right? If you have stress and adrenal gland problems, you won't control inflammation properly in the body because your adrenal glands that sit on your kidneys, they're responsible for part of that inflammation process and making it handle okay. If your thyroid doesn't work well, then your metabolism's not working well across the board, you know. And one of those things is controlling all these different processes that control inflammation. So you want to rule out those kind of conditions. I mentioned the diabetes thing, right? That is, especially type 2, is just so manageable if you want to be serious about your health, you know. And when you start getting those blood sugars back into normal levels, the inflammation just drops. I mean, that's just, it has to, because the sugar in the blood is inflammatory. It's only supposed to be a certain amount. And when it gets high, it's just like fire in there. You know, that's why people's eyes and legs, and they start losing all this stuff, right? Because it's just like a fire in there. And then I mentioned the nutritional deficiencies, that if you're not getting good food, organic food, or enough of the good things, then there is a place for supplementation. I'm not like a real, supplements shouldn't replace a poor diet, right? Supplements are supposed to supplement, you know, something you're doing. Preferably you have a base of a good diet, and then maybe for whatever condition, for whatever issue you've got, you might need a certain B vitamin or something. But we always want to have food as the foundation and get your diet and lifestyle and all that stuff under control so you don't need as much supplementation. You know, we weren't designed to need a B complex. It's helpful in today's society, but we weren't designed to have to need that kind of thing. And I mentioned there's different ways that you can get tested for this stuff. I mentioned the blood spot test, those different C-reactive protein, ESR, hemoglobin A1C. Those are all simple tests that they can run. And unfortunately, they're just not part of the standard thing they should be, because it's just a wonderful way to get a quick look at what's happening with somebody's body and then start investigating what the problem is. But that's kind of the like the baseline for getting your inflammation checked out. Because what they found is, you know, there's good fats and bad fats, right? All of the natural ones like fish oil and nuts and seeds and flax oil and these different things, those are all the good omegas, right, that your body needs to function. And those make up all your cells. And those are tend to be more what they call the anti-inflammatory oils. But these man-made ones that are these hydrogenated oils, right, that you see the term hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated, they've done a certain thing to the structure to make it last a long time, right? And that's why it gets more solid. Those oils over time do not nourish the body like the good stuff does. And it tends to create an environment where you're more inflamed, where those markers start going up. Because if there's a big chemistry thing that will make you sleep if I tried to explain it to you. But the good oils lower the inflammation, the bad ones raise it. And what's happened in our diet is that our foods are made up more of the bad ones, and we're not eating enough of the good ones. So you get this shift in your cells where there's more inflammation than the good stuff, because that's what it's made from, is the foods you eat. So that's like some chemistry that we can fix just with natural foods. Not that good. And then what we use in the office is something called nutrition response testing. It's a muscle testing system that most of you have experienced. But it can be helpful when the blood work is not showing what we think it should show, or there are certain things that are hard to find in the blood. And the muscle testing system uses the muscles like a biofeedback system to figure out what those are, or maybe what foods you're reactive to or sensitive to. And then it can pick up all of these toxins that are in your body. And then you use a diet and supplement program to stabilize everything while people are cleaning up their diet, you know, at the same time and getting less stressed. And all those factors have to be good in order for people to stay stable and not go backwards. So on the food side for the anti-inflammatory diet, one of the, like if someone asked me on the street, like what's a good way to eat? A simple method is that is very effective. It takes discipline, as most of the stuff does, to eat well these days. But it's called the Whole30 diet. And it's the word whole, WHOLE30.com. And it's a very basic diet, right? It's vegetables, protein, some fruit, some nuts and seeds, very little sugar at all, even honey. And no grain products whatsoever. So it's very basic, and it reduces a lot of the food-based inflammation. And most people will lose weight on that. And it's a 30-day program. It's very defined. You know, you can go to the website and they tell you what to do. And doing that can dramatically change how people feel. And then after that, what you can do to experiment with what foods may or may not be good for you is you start rotating food back in to see how you respond to it. And then see if your aches and pains get worse, or, I mean, invariably people lose weight. Their joint pains start going away and their energy starts going up and they start sleeping better. I mean, it's just amazing how fast that can change in people. There's different forms of that are offshoots. Another one that's similar, but it allows a lot more carbs, is like a Mediterranean style diet. But in general, a true Mediterranean diet is still quite anti-inflammatory. It allows more carbs than some people need, so which is easy to modify. But that's also another good one. And on the really strict side, I'm not a fan of doing this on a regular basis, but the keto diet is really popular now, so I just have to say something about it. I believe short term it is a really effective program. Some people, they can't do it, especially if they got liver or gallbladder problems. It's just too much fat, and they won't be able to handle it. They'll get sick. But it has some, you know, anti-cancer properties to it. Well, as does any whole food diet, but it can starve the cancer a little bit better. And but I'm just not a fan of doing it a long time, because it's not what I would call a natural diet. That's not how we would normally eat. You know, we're kind of foragers in general, and we're designed to eat lots of different things. and it restricts the carbs so tightly. You know, 20 grams a day, 25 grams a day is not a lot. And it's just not doable long term for most people. But it can be effective short term. Those are kind of like the biggies. There is another one called the Plant Paradox Diet. And this is by this MD that he figured this out. But it has to do with there's something called lectins in all foods. And in some people, they're quite reactive to some of those lectins. And so he designed this food program to really minimize the amount of those lectins. It's similar to the Whole30, but even stricter than the Whole30. Because there's one of the obvious ones where it's called nightshades. So when it comes to foods and inflammation, for some people, nightshades like potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, those type of things, they will cause lots of pain in the body and fatigue. So especially for someone that has like rheumatoid arthritis or fibromyalgia, I always look at evaluating whether or not they should eliminate those. Because if you're reactive to those foods and you eliminate them, you will feel so much better. It's incredible. I mean, it's night and day. I had a gal, she had fibromyalgia for years, and we eliminated the nightshades, and in a month she was 50% better just by eliminating nightshades. The Plant Paradox Diet. Yeah. Dr. Gundry is his name. He's a medical doctor. He actually originally kind of put this together for weight loss and because it can really be effective. But then he realized a lot of these people, their diabetes was going away, their RA was getting better, their diabetes was getting better. He's like, wow, something else is going on here. You know, then he did more research on it. But that can be really effective. On the food side too, all whole foods, right? The way God made them are good. Organic preferably, but things like berries are got such lots of qualities to them, and for your brain especially, organic preferably. All of the berries are good. Greens of any kind, you know, they're a protector for your liver and they're good for inflammation. Nuts, as long as you don't overdo them too much, because they have a lot of calories, and so you got to be careful. And there are some people that are reactive to nuts, so you got to be careful with the nuts. And ideally, like most people don't eat very many servings of fruits and vegetables. Ideally, you should be getting at least 7 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, which a serving is roughly a half a cup. So there's very few people that do that. But and if you eat that many, then you're not eating as many calories because you can't eat much of anything else. So you can actually lose weight getting that in there. There are lots of good spices like turmeric, curry, ginger, garlic, basil, cinnamon, rosemary, and thyme. Those have natural anti-inflammatory properties. And there's extracts you can get from these, but if you look at some of these countries like India and these other places, especially the islands, they use a lot of these spices as part of their normal everyday foods, right? And so that's what I do. Like when I make things, eggs and stuff, I put rosemary on there. I put spices in lots of my foods. So I'm getting little micro doses of these little anti-inflammatory spices, you know? So, those spices are the turmeric, curry, ginger, garlic, basil, cinnamon, rosemary, and thyme. There's others, but those are kind of like the big guys. You know, they're more, and those are things you can easily incorporate into your diet. I mentioned things like the omegas, the fish oil, flax oil, chia seeds. These are all good things. Walnuts are a good source of the oils. And when it comes to the animal products, so if you look at the composition of the fat in a grass-fed cow versus a commercial-fed cow, it is radically different. There is much more of the inflammatory fat because of its diet in a commercially raised cow than there is in a grass-fed cow. Because cows were meant to eat grass, not corn and not soy. They were meant to eat grass. But that doesn't get them to market fat, and so they don't do it that way anymore. But yeah, there's you could Google, you know, the fat composition of grass-fed beef versus commercial beef, and it's dramatically different. And when you eat that, that's what your cells become, right? The same with chicken, free range or organic chicken and eggs versus, well, I don't know if you guys have done it where you take a commercial egg and it's kind of a yellowish yolk, and you take a truly raised free ranged and it's orange. And I mean, there's much more nutrients because they're getting what they're supposed to get on a natural basis. And then avocados are another great fat. That's like one of my favorite fats. There's all kinds of good stuff in avocado. Again, it's kind of getting back to the basics, you know, of not eating as little processed food as possible. And it's not easy. I tell people it is much more work to be healthy in the 21st century than it used to be when we were growing up. I mean, I make almost everything I eat, and I try to make things in batches so I can freeze it and stuff, so I don't have to cook as much. But it's a lot more work. That's all there is to it. The good thing is nowadays, compared to 20 years ago, you can actually get some healthy paleo stuff that are mixes that are pretty good now, and almond flour and coconut flour, all these different things that can be really good. Yeah. And do you have a question?
Yeah, but do you recommend non-GMO too?
Oh yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, organic's the best because it's automatically non-GMO, but I'm just so concerned about that whole that GMO thing of how they've altered our grains and everything. It's just there's parts of Europe that don't even allow that stuff, right? They won't even allow it in. That should tell us something. If they won't allow a grain or something from the US because they're concerned about that GMO thing, which could potentially change the way our body works. And there's some studies that say it can affect your digestion when you eat those grains and stuff that are genetically modified. And so I'm just not a fan at all of that stuff. It can be very detrimental in the long run. So besides the foods that I mentioned, so a good detox to get rid of the toxins, that reduces your inflammation. If you have like organ problems with your thyroid or adrenals and your pancreas, you have to address that. On the stress side, there's lots of relaxation techniques you can do, right, to help calm your stress down. Just sitting at the beach for an hour lowers your stress hormones. They've measured all that stuff. You can just sitting there doing nothing, and your stress hormones are measurably lower than they were before, which usually means your inflammation's better. And then correcting whatever nutritional deficiencies there are there too. There are some different technologies, you know, that they're looking into for doing different things with inflammation. One of them is pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, and it's a mat that you lie on. We actually have one in our office. But it's really cool technology. It's been around for decades. They've used it in Europe a lot. It's becoming more popular in the States the past 10 years or so. But it helps your cells kind of clean themselves, and it helps them oxygenate better, which helps you the inflammation. So it could be a really good adjunctive therapy to have. And slowly but surely, that the home units are coming down in prices, but it's really a very effective technique to help overall inflammation. And I mentioned if you don't not get enough B vitamins, so a good B complex, a good mineral complex. And then for some people, if they do have really high levels of inflammation, taking those herbs that I mentioned in extract form can be helpful sometimes, right? The turmeric that I mentioned, you know, curcumin is the extract that they make from that. That's very popular nowadays. And that can be very beneficial to help reduce inflammation while people are cleaning up their diet and their lifestyle and those kind of things. Because there is a place to use those kind of things. And then the fish oils and high doses and those kind of things. But you always gotta, like, it's all pieces, right? You gotta address the stress, your activity levels, you have to move because that helps inflammation. And getting the diet so that it's as clean as possible so you're not putting in inflammation, you know? Because that's the problem. We've been putting in too much inflammation for years and not doing enough of the good stuff on the other side. That's about it. Do you have any questions now?
What did you say about detox?
The detox?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's various ways depending on, when I do the muscle testing, that helps me define what toxins you may have in your body. There are some different, if you go to what they call a functional medicine doctor, that there are blood tests and different things you can do. It's very expensive, unfortunately, but That can tell you some of the toxins in your body. And then there's different agents, you know, that you can take, herbs and different nutrients that will help cleanse your body. And usually that's over, you know, several months to do it. Some people have these, like, you know, two-week programs. It's usually not enough. It can help, but you usually have to do a slow one, usually over 2 to 3 months to get the best effect. And the other way, I didn't mention it, is sauna, right? Sauna is an excellent way to detox. And it could be just the plain sauna. The infrared saunas are awesome. You get even more benefit from them. But even... Yeah, so saunas, you have to be careful. You start out slow in the beginning, usually 5 to 10 minutes at the most, but 20 to 30 minutes is really good. But most people, they can't handle that in the beginning, especially if it's the traditional steam or dry sauna. They're very hot. The infrared saunas, you can tweak those a little more, and you can usually set the temperatures lower so you get the infrared and the heat effect. But that's a good way to detox, actually. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Should you have some kind of special drink when you're doing the infrared
sauna? Yeah, so that depends on how well the person's minerals are in their diet and if they're eating enough of those. If they're not, then if they're sweating a lot, if there's someone that like sweats profusely when they have a sauna, then there's different mineral drinks, like concentrates. Trace Minerals makes a mineral. Trace Mineral thing that's good to take while you're doing the sauna stuff. Because sometimes if you're doing it a lot and often and you're not getting enough minerals in, then you could get low in your minerals.
Now, what would you do?
I usually tell people 2 or 3 times a week to start with. And if they were doing like an active detox program every day for a month, it would be great. But usually 3 times a week is enough. To get a good effect. Mm-hmm.
What about the water that you're drinking?
Yeah, so naturally we would get water from a spring or a lake or the rain, right? Well, it's pretty polluted now, unfortunately. I mean, they can measure arsenic in most wells, you know. So there's various methods. Right now, what I use at home, I have a whole home like carbon-type filtration system that gets most of the chlorine and junk out. And then for my drinking water, I use a Berkey. It's a gravity feed filter. It's a very good filter. You can travel with it, you know, and it gets almost everything out. It leaves the minerals in, but it gets almost every bit of the bad stuff out, including drugs. That's another thing we don't realize, that our groundwater system and reservoirs are being contaminated with drugs from the metabolites of people peeing the stuff out into the toilet. So, yeah, so the one I have, it's like a composite system. It's different. It has charcoal and some other stuff in there, but its main purpose is to get the like sediment and chlorine out of your system, out of the water.
For the whole house?
Mm, yeah. And you can drink it too, but I just prefer to run it through the Berkey, because the Berkey gets the heavy metals or anything that's left, you know, that I'm drinking, because I want my drinking to be as pure as possible. The distilled water, I think, is good for like detoxing and stuff, but I don't think I would stay on that for a long time, because there's a little controversy about if it throws off your body a little bit, drinking distilled water for like years on end. Because actually we wouldn't, like I said, the way we naturally drink water is it would be through a spring or something, which would be naturally mineralized, and it wouldn't be that kind of water, you know what I mean?
You mentioned, you touched on sleeping for 8 hours, I think you said. It sounds like that would be the best. Is it 8 hours continuous? Is it 8 hours just like slept 4 hours on the couch and then 4 hours in the bed? Is that the same thing as getting...
So one of the things when it comes to the... So there's two things there. There's time and there's quality. So your body goes in and out of this cycle, right? A REM sleep and deep sleep and light sleep, right? It cycles through these three phases of sleep. Light, deep, and REM. And you should have a certain amount of each of those. The more deep sleep you get, the less sleep you need. Because a lot of good stuff happens during that deep sleep time that's restorative. And ideally it would be, you know, in bed that whole time, you know, 7-8 hours, instead of getting up. And because each time you get up, then you go out of your sleep cycle period, and you got to start over, so to speak, you know, when you get up. So ideally it would just be straight through. And there's some science that says if you start getting more than like 2 hours of deep sleep, then you don't need the 8 hours, you know, that it's so restorative that you need less total sleep time. Because people want to do more, right, and sleep less.
You also talked about aspirins, I think, being inflammatory. What about the scenarios where long-term use of baby aspirin is recommended?
Yeah, just not a fan of that process. I'm just not a fan of it because it's still a drug. You'd be surprised the amount of people that bleed out from aspirin every year. And some of it's just the low-dose aspirin. But if you have a good diet and a good lifestyle, you don't need aspirin. That's the bottom line. And if you did these other tests I mentioned, the CRP, the homocysteine, and have those under control, then you shouldn't have to be taking those kind of things. Yeah.
Speaking of testing, is there a way to test if your body is more alkaline or more acidic?
Yeah, so there's some debate about that with the, so pH testing, right? I could do a whole talk on just pH testing. The two main ways they do that is with your saliva and your urine, right? And I'm not an expert on that, but there are ranges, and you want it to be in a certain range. And you have to consistently do it at a certain time of the day to get consistent results so you can gauge where you are on that scope, you know, of where it is. The blood is always going to stay in a certain amount of pH, right? Because it can't handle a big swing because your body won't work. It's designed to have a very narrow pH range. And the way it keeps that pH range is by changing your breathing and what you pee out of your body. That's how it alters your that very narrow window in the blood, is by changing your oxygen levels and all these other things that happen. So your urine and your saliva can change quite a bit depending on what your body's doing. But it still is a measure, because you can get like a trend if you start tracking that over time. And if it's like pretty far out of the normal, you know, that normal range, and you can look that up online, then something's going on that you need to shift, you know. And then you can use that to track, you know, my diet, I changed my diet, did it change those numbers? You know, so I don't have those numbers for you, but there's a little bit of science behind tracking your pH with the saliva and the urine. So,
is one or the other more preferable?
Depending on who you read, yeah. So, I mean, there are some very clear standards with the urine, right? Because if you have a urine test, if you go to your doctor, it does have a pH range there, right? But it's supposed to be done like a certain time in the morning, and after a first void, and so it's very, you have to be very consistent the way you do it. So I would say the more standard way would be the urine.
Okay.
Standard traditional would be the urine. Because okay. Some people say that the saliva one's too easy to fluctuate, depending on what you ate and everything. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I have a question about electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
You hear a lot about make sure you get enough electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And number two, would you agree with that?
Yeah, she was asking about electrolytes. You know, and these are your minerals, basically, you know, potassium, sodium, and all these different things that you eat. that ideally, if you had a good diet and you weren't eating a lot of junk, that should all be pretty normal. And you have like pretty good organic food. But if you're like a construction worker that then he sweats profusely all day long and he has a horrible diet, a person like that might be in trouble of potentially having low electrolytes, like a borderline, you know, low electrolyte thing, which makes you more susceptible to heart issues and all kinds of things. So they are very important. But I'm just not a fan of things like Gatorade and like that, because there's natural forms of that now that don't have dyes, and high fructose corn syrup, you know, as part of the base, that can replenish that on a regular basis.
Also have a whole house charcoal filter, mm-hmm. and then I have a filter because my husband had cancer,
mm-hmm.
and I have a drinking water filter that's supposed to remove 99.9% of all the
mm-hmm. yeah.
junk. Does it also remove electrolytes?
If it's reverse osmosis, it does. Yeah, the reverse osmosis removes everything.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very pure water. There's no doubt about it. It's definitely pure. And there's, you know, most people say that the, as I mentioned, if you were getting water from a stream that was clean and pure, that wasn't contaminated, there'd be X amount of minerals in there, right, depending on where it was from. Most of our minerals come from our diet, come from food, not from the water. So you will have people that will use that as a selling point. Oh, it's reverse osmosis, it takes everything out, and that's not good for you. Well, the reality is you really don't get a lot of minerals in your water if you added them up, right? Most of your minerals from your food. So, but I'm still a fan of having some minerals in the water, because that's naturally how it would be. So I used to have reverse osmosis years ago, but I switched to the Berkey. I like that it didn't. And there's another thing, I think the technology is getting better, but it used to be for the reverse osmosis, the way it works, it forces the water through this membrane, and for every gallon that of water that was filtered, it wasted 3 to 5 gallons of water, right, that went into your drainage system, which in Palm Bay, you pay for that. That water that goes out, you pay for that wastewater, and it's just wasting water. So after I learned how that technology worked, that it wastes water to make water, it's like, I don't like that. You know, I just pour a gallon of my Berkey and it goes down 15 minutes later and I got water, you know?
For those of you who don't have like a water filtration system, you've heard of Berkeys before, BERKEY, those are awesome. They're gravity fed, you don't have to have electricity. Just pour the water in and it plops right back out through these filters, and you can add fluoride filters in it too for anybody sensitive to fluoride. And it's relatively inexpensive. You can pack it up. They've got a little packable one you can take with you on vacation and or on a missions trip or anything. It's very nice.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Do you purchase it directly through their website, or is it?
Yeah.
And they'll have, you know, they're stainless, 100% stainless steel. I've had one for several years and it looks new. You know, you're going to pay $250 or something for one, but and then the filters, I think that's within filters. Then you have to replace the filters so many, like every 6,000 gallons kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's awesome. It's great.
It's really good.
We use it all the time.
Yeah, I love it.
Does it keep track of how many gallons you
No, what no, you do is you average. Oh, I think I fill it up on an average of twice a day, depending on what size. There's like 6 sizes you can get. And you go, okay, and you multiply it times 365 days a year, and then you get your gallons.
Anything else? All right. Appreciate you coming.
Appreciate
you. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.